Welcome to the Hexperts, a UK Battletech podcast. The aim of our podcast is to introduce our friend Dom to the amazing Battletech universe. Any old or new players listening, feel free to listen along. This episode, your hosts are myself, Lewis, Tom.
Hello, I'm Tom.
Nathan.
Hello, I'm Nathan.
And our special guest, Dom.
I suppose that's me.
That is you. Anyway, so probably some introductions to who we are. I've got a couple of questions to kind of ask you guys to introduce us to the listeners. So I'll probably start with yourself, Tom. How long have you been in the wargaming hobby?
Well, Lewis, that's a great question. Thank you. I've been in the hobby around 12 years. So I've been around the block a little bit, but I think it's always good to try something new, which is what we're trying to do with Dom here, onboard him into this great world.
Super. Do you know how long you've been interested in Battletech, Tom? It's not been too long for you, has it?
Well, it's been as long as you've been trying to get me into it, Liz. It's probably been about 2 years, although it has taken me with great storm, to be honest. I'm looking at a cabinet next to me filled with beautiful battle mechs, so it kind of has taken over my life.
Fantastic. That's good to hear. And obviously, like you said, what drew you into the game is my next question, but obviously that was me forcing you to play games.
It was, but I think I was a little bit apprehensive because it is in 6mm. So, you know, with a background in 28mm, it was a new challenge for me. But once I sort of sat down and started painting the mechs, one turns into four, turns into 150. So I think for me, a large draw is just big stumpy robots.
We do.
They're always fun.
We do like big stumpy robots. And Gauss rifle to your head, Tom, what's your favourite mech and why?
That's got to be the Blitzkrieg. I know, it's a
menace. I don't like it. No, it's such a menace.
It is a menace around the local clubs, but I am very fond of a UAC 20 in a dream. So I am actually painting one up at the moment as well. So it will be seen more often.
Oh, super. And apparently there's supposed to be one coming out in resin at some point in the future, so I'm not sure if I'm looking forward to that or dreading that happening.
Well, I did get Randall Bills to put it on the schedule, so, you know, hopefully he pushes it up to get a UK release recently, you know, a little bit sooner.
Hopefully so. That's you anyway, Tom. So, Nathan, how long have you been in the hobby?
I've been playing Battletech for 2 years.
Oh, how about wargaming in general, Nathan? Because you're only a young one.
I've been in it about 11 years at this point, since I was 12.
It's 12.
Obviously, 40k. Picked up some goblins and then, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's not uncommon to come in with within 40k and I suppose also having goblins.
yeah.
Cool. And like you said, Battletech, you've been in, you say, a couple of years you've been playing?
Yeah, two years at this point, yeah.
And so,
I think it was mainly, well, you, obviously, roping us all in, but also getting the blind boxes. That was the gamble.
Yeah, we do like our gambling here.
We do like a little bit of gambling.
We do like those blind boxes. They don't last very long on the shelf. And I don't think they last very long in the UK in general, or I think anywhere in the world keeps them for very long anyway. And same question to you, Nathan. Gauss rifles ahead. What's your favourite mech and why?
Oh, I'm gonna have to say that now it is definitely the Jade Hawk because it is the coolest looking motherfucker ever.
He is a pretty cool looking guy.
He is really cool. I mean, he's got partial wing and everything. I, as you guys know, recently got the Iron Wind miniatures model of him jumping about, which I think is a very nice model.
Yeah, you don't see that very often, but it's such a nice model. I don't know why there's not more people who've got that, but it's such a cool looking model.
I'm just happy that he's got a metal base as well, because if I had to put him on a plastic one, he'd probably fall over a lot more.
Yeah, I think I've just built some Iron Wind metals models earlier today, and I think I might need to swap to a metal base because I think some of mine are going to tip over soon as well. But yeah, cool. So Jade Hawk then.
Yep.
Super, he's pretty cool. I'll probably go for myself next, just because obviously we'll leave Dom to last. But yeah, so wargaming hobby, I think I've been in since the early 2000s. I probably got into playing some BattleTech a couple of years after that, when I was introduced at one of the local shops I was playing at. Got really into buying little single packs of mechs, and I had a bit of a gap for quite a few years, and it's recently some of the guys at our local club, Boarding Brum, were showing me some of the plastics, and that really drew me back in. Yeah, and I suppose for myself, favourite mech at the moment, I'm really into the Axeman. When I got into the game, and until recently I wasn't keen on mechs carrying axes or weapons, but playing with him and painting up the model, I've really grown to love him. Yeah, that's me really. Both me and Tom are Catalyst demo agents, just so you know, and we're obviously trying to get more people into the hobby locally, and also that's one of the reasons as well we're doing this podcast.
I mean, yeah, Lewis, you are doing a much better job than me. You've got, I think, 100% of the people in this room interested in BattleTech. Well, so
not I don't think 100% just yet, which would lead leads us on to our last special guest for this episode with Dom. I suppose we can ask some of these questions to Dom, but we might not have the same answers. Was there anything else you were going to say there? Sorry, Tom.
No, I think that was an excellent segue, Lewis. they very professional.
Thank you very much. But yeah, so Dom, how long have you been in wargaming?
So I've been knocking around in wargaming for a while now. But again, sort of mostly Warhammer, but also sort of some of the sort of local scene gets, we sort of all play sort of Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty modern game, unlike sort of BattleTech. Basically, and as far as I understand, it's been around since sort of time immemorial.
It's quite an old game. I think is it 40th this year, I think? The 40th anniversary?
Yeah, the 40th anniversary was this year. We did luckily get to see Randall Bills on his world tour as well.
Yeah,
so
it has been around for quite a while.
Older than some of us.
Yeah, definitely some of
us. Actually, older than
I think all of us. Yeah, all of us.
Yeah.
Dom, is that your wargaming introduction there, or is there any more you got to add?
Pretty much. I mean, every time you mention this Randall folk, I always imagine that you know, that guy that's been viral on TikTok with the big grey beard standing over the doom metal band. That's what I picture when I think of Randall Bills these days. Just like a crazed old man. And that's kind of all I know about BattleTech, really. I just know that it's really old. I know that it's run by crazy old men.
Super. Well, obviously, this question might not be too applicable to you, Dom. What has interested you in BattleTech?
I mean, the thing that interested me is that we obviously all started playing. Is it Clans? MechWarrior 5 yeah. Clans? Is that the one that we played?
Yeah, that's
so it. We played that a few months ago when it came out. Issues with the game itself, notwithstanding, as a console player, it kind of it wasn't a great game, to be honest. But it made me more interested in the universe. In the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So when you're all referencing all these things like you know, large lasers and stuff, I was like, oh, okay. Well, what is that? What actually is a large laser? And sort of you guys, obviously, you're the experts. You know more than I do. So I was just kind of, I'm interested in hearing about that, and maybe, you know, if it takes my fancy, I'll give it a try, give it a go.
Super duper, that's great. But yeah, that's who we are anyway. I suppose I was going to ask what your favourite mech is, but I don't know if you remember any of the ones from the game, Tom, that you liked.
I think I remember a few. Like, I know that there's the Mad Cat, maybe.
Yeah,
that's
Mad Cat.
That's a mech, probably.
That is a mech of all time.
Yep, that's one of the mechs. I remember the Atlas as well. That's one of them.
Yeah,
he's like the main guy, isn't he? He's like the Captain America of.
He's on a lot of the box art at the moment, and so is the Mad Cat, to be honest. But it's yeah, there are some that stand out. I suppose we were getting a bit more hyped up when running around the corner and seeing an Atlas compared to you. It was like, which was
so 40k parlance. I'm effectively like an Ultramarine fan at this point.
Yep, super.
Fantastic. Good start.
Cool. But yeah, so that's kind of, as I said, an introduction to all of us. We're quite regular with our BattleTech hobby. So something, before we have a quick talk about what we've been up to recently. So Tom, have you got any hobby in the games you've been playing recently?
I do. I know. Absolutely crazy. So locally, we have been playing a Battletech Mercenaries campaign, which has taken us all by storm. We've super enjoyed it, and I think at some point we are going to talk about it probably a little bit more in depth once we're sort of through the weeds. And we've explained it on what a mercenary is.
Yeah.
At a later point. But played a couple of games of that. Very good. Starting to love the narrative that's coming out of the games. For those of you that may have played it yourself, on the first planet of Zongshan, you can pick up a guy called Morlon the Bloody. He's in a terrible quick draw. But a very lucky through armor crit into some SRM4 ammo has sort of cemented him in the group as a local villain. He's kind of taken on a Hans Gruber-esque
personality.
He's playing it up a little bit, but he's not a great guy.
He's definitely the bad guy, I think, of our local campaign. Oh,
I think
than Lewis, obviously.
Whoa.
Other than Lewis. I think I've got vendettas from at least three other mercenary groups at the moment, specifically only on Morlon, not the rest of my group. So
I have a vendetta against the other person.
Hey, look, pilots are pilots. But yeah, we've been having a load of fun. I'm always painting a bit of Battletech up as well. I'm currently painting up a Eris, beautiful little premium mech from Catalyst. Lovely design. This is my second one. I converted the first one into a Hell, which is
not as good. Not as good as the Ares.
Not as good as the Ares, so I had to buy another one. Had to buy another one, and he is now becoming Starscream because, of course, he is.
He does have that look to him.
He's just got the vibe.
Would you fuck, marry, or kill the Ares?
Hell, I would do all three. It's a love and hate relationship. However, I have got one that I only love, which is the little Dola. I think it's a 35-ton Capellan mech from a later period. It's beautiful. It looks like it's come straight out of Titanfall. It's got a big Bowie knife. It's amazing. So I am soldiering away on some other stuff in the background. But yeah, I think that's really what I've been doing this week.
Super duper. I suppose we can move on to Nathan. Nathan, what have you been up to hobby and game-wise? I know it's not gone exactly to plan for you recently.
well, actually, it kind of has. So I've played two games of the Mercenary campaign. The first one against Tom, which really didn't go well for me, as my Fire Moth, which is really light mech, got blown off the table by airstrikes.
Yeah, that was a bit brutal, I think.
Yeah, but we recover and we move forwards. But other than that, the only hobby I've really been doing is building and painting my new metal miniatures I've got.
Yeah, like I said earlier, that Jade Hawk is a real nice looking mech. What was some of the other ones you got? Because you've got some of those painted up as well recently.
I got the Flamberg.
Yeah.
And I got the Gear Falcon.
Gear Falcon. A very Jade Falcon-esque order, I think he had.
Hawk Falcon and I don't even know what a Flamberg is.
It's a sword, I think, isn't it?
It is a title.
I thought it was like a Andrew Lyle or something.
tasty souffle.
Yeah, just about as likely to cut your fingers off. So
true.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good.
But yeah, and is that your hobby, Nathan? Is that what you've been up to?
Yep.
Super duper.
That's me done.
As I suppose, no surprise, as the same with Tom and Nathan, we've been playing the Hinterlands campaign. I've kind of dropped in a bit later than the other guys, so I've just dropped in with an Inferno and an Ares. We've got kind of an Ares thing going on at the moment. I think we've all fallen in love with it again. And just been playing some games with that. I've not had too bad of games. I've just had the Inferno arrive from Ironwind Metals. I've been substituting it with a Crusader for the moment, so I've been not enjoying putting it together because my glue's not been working, but I'm looking forward to getting it painted and actually having the right mech on the battlefield. Yeah, that's it really for me. My games have gone to plan. We've not done anything too crazy. We've not got any pilots of renown like Tom. Our guys are very friendly, vanilla, and honourable, I think. Super. But yeah.
The implication being that Tom's mechs aren't friendly.
They're definitely not. I think some of them are okay, but
they're,
I think
definitely not honourable.
Yeah, they I think Morlon has definitely gone. He's got a bad reputation for himself. You can't have, I think, at least 80% of the people playing the campaign wanting to kill your one pilot without doing some dishonourable things.
Look, Morlon isn't responsible for any of those things. He's currently under the purview of the Vesper Marches. So all of what he's doing is completely legal, and all of you just need to, you know, step up your game, really.
Yeah, cool.
We need less Morlon. Is that what we're saying?
Less,
more Morlon. More Morlon.
More Morlon.
More Morlon. I think there's. I think when Morlon disappears, I think there'll be cheers from around the game shop anyway. But yeah, and obviously for yourself as well, Dom. Have you had any hobby? I suppose it might not be BattleTech related, but obviously, is there anything you've been up to hobby wise?
I mean, I am a Warhammer guy, basically. I'm a Warhammer guy, which means I'm always painting some sort of regiment for my my Warriors of Chaos army.
So this
to be fair, the models are about as old as BattleTech models.
Yeah, I think some of them are. Some of the guys' models that we've been seeing recently, I think, might be older. But yeah, so that's the old world you're playing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the old world, the new version of Warhammer Fantasy. For those that aren't super in the loop with GW, they killed the game about 10, 11 years ago, and then they've brought it back, so it's sort of like a new Coke moment. Everyone's loving it at the store. We've got, again, a little campaign running. And yeah, I've just been working on a Warriors of Chaos army for those, so I'll post some pictures in the chat. Effectively,
yeah.
So everyone can have a little peek at them.
We'll have a look at those. We'll say we've also been trying to jump in with that, but I think this Hinterlands campaign has distracted a lot of us from the Warhammer campaign, hasn't it? But I think some of us are doing better than others at painting up armies for both systems.
Too many goblins.
Too many goblins for you. Yeah.
Goblins.
Too many goblins. I'm not doing well. I've only got 18 models to paint for the old world, and I'm still struggling with that. Oh well.
But
super duper. So yeah, anything? You guys all wrapped up with hobby?
Yep.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Let's just move on to some brief news then. There's a couple packs coming out, but as we're a UK podcast, we have a UK delivery time, so a lot of these things might be out for the States or in the rest of the world, but we won't see them for a little bit usually. So some of the packs that have recently started trickling out are the Davian Force packs. So we've got the Davian Cavalry Lance, it's got the Hellspawn, Legionnaire, Gunsmith, and it's a Federated Sons variant of the Enforcer, so I don't know which one that is. Anything to say on those guys? I'm keen on the Legionnaire. I do like the Legionnaire. He comes with a little...
Is the Legionnaire the one with the big legs?
Is the one that...
Nathan hates the one with the big legs.
It's too many big legs.
The Marauderish one.
That's the other pack we're about to talk about. The Legionnaire's got a big he's got a big gun on his back. He's pretty much a single gun for him.
Ooh.
You probably like him. He's like a friendly Blitzkrieg. He's more of a trooper mech.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I'm also a big fan of the Axeman looking one as well.
The X-Men looking one. So.
Definitely going to be picking him up.
Super. Any thoughts on that pack, Tom?
They're Davian mechs of all time.
They are Davian mechs of all time.
I love a Rack 5, so the Legionnaire is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And he is actually the answer to the Lyran Blitzkrieg, so they're sort of chalk and cheese a little bit. But... overall, I think I'm going to have to see them on the board to get really excited.
Super. And carrying on with the Davian theme, we've got the Heavy Battle Lance coming out at the same time as that, which has got the Templar, the Falconer, Thanatos, and the Federated Sons variant of the Thunderbolt, which is the new Avalon Institute of Science, or the NAIS Thunderbolt. I know personally, I'm real keen on that Thunderbolt. I'm loving he's got a interchangeable cockpit by the looks of things. Rack 5 and SRM6, I think. I know the Falcon is quite a favourite, and the Templar. I don't know if you guys have got any opinions on the box coming.
As I said before, I do very much like the
Falconer.
Falconer.
Yeah, I think he's I think he's a fan favourite overall. Any in there, Tom, for you?
Big Templar love.
Big Templar.
Just an absolutely meaty assault mech with a Gauss rifle. You can't really go wrong with it. And then I think probably one that people that played, I think it was in Mech Warrior 4, the Thanatos is going to be another one that people are liking. I'm really enjoying that they are redesigning and re-putting out Mech Warrior 4 mechs. The Argus in the Star League pack was a big win for me as well. So I think as long as we keep, you know, just modernizing these designs, they'll just be home runs.
Super. And then another pack that's coming out soon, which I think might be an exclusive to Catalyst, is the Black Remnant Command Lance, which is obviously a tie-in with the Penny Arcade guys, or the PAX guys. That's got the Dragonfire, Blood Asp Eye, obviously a variant of the Blood Asp, Flashman, and the Cyclops with the missiles, which I know you're keen on, Tom.
I'm just a big Marion hegemony kind of guy, and when we get to the periphery at a later date, I am going to be gushing over them because I do love periphery nations. But yeah, I think all of them are really nice. The Blood Asp, getting another one's always going to be a good one. Dragonfire, brilliant mech. Love the ability in the plastic kit to have different variants. I think that's something with plastic casting that we're not necessarily getting all the time.
Yep.
But they are trying something new, and I really do appreciate that. And then the Flashman is just a win. Just another Flashman's another good mech.
We do like the Flashman. Any in there, Nathan, that stood out to you?
I am absolutely in love with this box, to be honest. Didn't know the Dragonfly existed till now, but now I need one.
Yeah.
That's a lot of missiles on that Cyclops.
Yeah,
and I mean, Fleshman, yes. And I do enjoy the Blood Asp. I like how many guns he has.
Was that the Fleshman?
The Fleshman, yeah.
I think it's because it wasn't yours. One of you had a flesh-coloured Flashman for a while, which worried me. was it yours, Nathan?
It wasn't
Tom's.
I can't remember who had... Tom. It had to be Tom. He's not here to
really
speak to himself at the moment.
I really hate that. I really hate that. I really hate the Flashman.
No,
I love the Flashman.
He's a good little mech. I think I definitely, when we can do, would try and pick that up. I don't know if there's, I say, I don't think there's anything massively in there that I really want and need to have, but sure, it's something that I'll try and pick up. And I suppose, lastly, more recently today, that we've seen some posts coming up that the McCarran's Armored Cavalry box that is arriving in Amazon for the UK. So that one, I thought that was going to be exclusive to Barnes & Noble for a bit longer, but that one's coming out, and that's obviously got a bunch of fun mechs, which I think me and Tom, we've got those. I don't know if you're interested to pick up one of those boxes, Nathan, because that's got the Black Knight. Who else has it got in there? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Do you remember who it's got in there, you guys?
No, I haven't seen it. Oh, no. I'm guessing it's a bunch of a spheroid mix.
Oh, it's a bunch of spheroid.
It is. It's the Black Knight, the Quad PPC Awesome,
yeah,
the Tianzong, and then a Jumping Star Slayer.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Ooh, the Quad PPC Awesome.
Yeah.
He's been really good in some games I've played.
He's even awesomer.
He's an awesome. Super. So, yeah, so that one, it's good to see that one coming out, but I don't know I haven't even started painting the first box, but I'm not sure if we need another one just yet. Cool. But yeah, so that's pretty much kind of a introduction to us and a bit of a hobby roundup. So next we're going to be going into our main talking point of the session, which we'll be talking about what is Battletech. So we'll catch you guys on the flip. Okay, and we're back. And we're going to be talking about our main section today. Well, I suppose I'm going to let Dom introduce this.
Yeah, so thanks. Cheers, Lewis. My biggest question so far, having been sort of told, you know, what Battletech generally is, like, what is Battletech literally? Like, when is it set? Is it, like, our Earth? Is it like an alternate? Is it like an alternate Earth? Is it like Bizarro Land? I don't really understand where it's meant to be.
I think one of the problems is, I think, especially with a lot of talks about BattleTech, is that it's difficult talking about it unless you kind of start from the start, and then it kind of gives you the base knowledge of what's going on. So, as you said, it is a game. The game itself started mid-80s. There's a number of tabletop slash war
What else
games.
started in the mid-80s, Lewis? What else started in the mid-80s?
I don't know, Dom. Give me some more things that started in the mid-80s.
I feel like the football career of Eric Cantona started in the mid-80s. I think that's when he was playing back out in France.
That may be what happened.
I think that the subgenre of metal called death metal started about in the mid-80s, I reckon, roughly.
Well, I'll have to for next session, I have to be ready with some more 80s lore. But the 80s lore that I know is that BattleTech started in the mid 80s. The game itself is a there's a number of games. The ones we see most common are is a Total War or Classic BattleTech, and we've got Alpha Strike, as well as
Okay, so what's the difference between those two? I don't really understand.
Super Duper.
Why have you
Well,
got two different names for the same game?
They're slightly different. So BattleTech Total War or Classic is the kind of the original BattleTech, originally called Battle Droids, is a hex-based system where you're battling 12-meter-tall battle mechs. You'll be tracking damage, ammo, and heat. And the games are really great. I really like them because you can have your one-off games, or as you've probably gathered from earlier on in the show, and you've seen us playing, Dom, is that it's great for your kind of connected kind of campaign games where have tracking your ammo and your damage and stuff adds a lot of interest and some kind of what's it granularity and story to the games we're playing. So that's Classic or Total War, as it's officially called, and Alpha Strike, as you're saying, is the some might say the more streamlined version of the game, where you take a lot of the kind of the tracking that you do on the classic system, and you simplify it. Maybe not the nicest way of putting it, but you do simplify it slightly. Well, classic, you usually play with A4 sheets for tracking your mechs, whereas Alpha Strike you're using single cards. And Alpha Strike usually, being a bit more simplified, lets you play larger games as well. So, classic, you can be re usually playing one to four mechs usually. You can play more, obviously, but it can take a lot longer. Whereas Alpha Strike, I think the idea is more that you're playing what they call a company, so probably 12 mechs versus 12 mechs, and you can get those games done within a gaming session at your club. Whereas if you try to do that with Total War, you might find that you'd be needing a day or more to get that done. But yeah, but obviously that's
So it's sort of like Diet Coke and full fat Coke, basically.
But there are people that
Yeah.
they're both fun games, and there's a lot of detail in both systems. Classic's got a lot of detail, but Alpha Strike can have as much detail as you want. You've got a number of things. You've got vi all sorts of vehicles, ground effect vehicles, spaceships, whatever you can think of. There's probably a rule for it in either system, which is great.
Going off that Coke metaphor, I'd say that Alpha Strike's like Diet Coke, and Classic is like full fat Coke. Except when you drink, except if you had to drink full fat Coke and you had the instructions to calculate the carbonation of the drink
It's
on the bottle.
not as complicated as that. It's I think we I think more
And how to
recent
simulate every bubble.
yeah I think more recently, I think the game might be seen as quite a granular game, but I gathered when it came out was not actually that was it was a relatively streamlined game. But I think now, compared to most games out, it's that granularity is seen as is quite high. But yeah,
Okay, so can you use nuclear weapons in this game?
you can. We don't generally, but
Yeah.
it usually ends quite
Yeah,
badly.
Luce doesn't let me.
I don't let you. I'm a bit worried about in the campaign because I think we can get some We haven't got that far yet, so I'm a bit worried when that becomes available to some of the players. I'm sure Morlon will definitely oh, yeah. He'll be definitely grabbing those any time he can get one of them. He'll be grabbing them. I'm not sure Nathan's
as soon as he sees an orphanage right there for the new quota.
Oh dear, Morlon is he's a menace. We'll say Nathan's Jade Falcon-esque mercenaries definitely won't be grabbing any nukes with the state they've been left in this week. Obviously, so that's a bit of an overview of the game system. But more importantly than the game system is obviously what is BattleTech, the lore, like what's actually going on, or why are these 12 meter tall battle mechs fighting each other? We can come back to the game system.
A lot of people describe it as like Game of Thrones in space, which I feel like is a bit of an old hat description of a lot of things now, but I feel like I hear that quite commonly with BattleTech.
Yeah, well, some people do say Game of Thrones is BattleTech in fantasy, because obviously this predates Game of Thrones. It is a good description though, because there is so much going on in the background in the universe. It is a very much there's things going on here, there, and everywhere, and it's not what you expect. And there's love stories and wars and war crimes galore. But we can.
Oh, those are the three things that we always talk about, right? We've got wars, love story, and war crimes.
Yes,
those are the three. They're three
building blocks of fiction.
Yeah, we'll have space kind of fiction that seems to be. You do need to have those. But like I said, that's a quick overview of the game system. We'll probably go into that a bit more detail maybe in the future when you're more comfortable looking at that, Dom. But more important than the rules at this moment probably is some of the lore. So I was probably going to move across to Tom, a qualified historian, to talk about the background of BattleTech. How did we get from wherever it started to now? Tom might be able to tell us, is this a future Earth, or is this a completely different universe, or what's going on? Tom, I'll let you take over here.
Well, thank you, Lewis. I have got my elbow patches on, so I am fully qualified to talk about the history of BattleTech. So, BattleTech is classed as a military history sort of game, as sort of fighting and big stompy robots are a sort of central part of the universe. But something that many people may not know is actually the point of divergence is in the late 1990s. So
Tom, what happened in the late 1990s?
Well, that's great.
Other than this point of divergence.
I think some of you were born.
some people were born in the late 1990s. I've been told. The Cold War ends pretty much as it does in our history. However, in 1994, just before the mid-90s, Europe and Japan decide to create an orbital industrial facility known as Crippen Station. This goes well until some hardliners take over in what's left of the Soviet Union, and there is a pretty bad war, which sort of brings all of the Western, in quotation marks, powers together under what's known as the Western Alliance.
But you know what I think, Tom? I think that all war is pretty bad.
Well, I've got some bad news for you then, because it
gets worse.
So, after the sort of formation of this world government, there's something called the Alliance Space Command, which is formed in 2016, which, you know, unfortunately was only 9 years ago, so I'm waiting for lunar settlements. And actually, only 5 years ago, they discovered fusion power. So
this is like Barack Obama era, kind of. Donald Trump's just about to get into office. This is when this is happening.
Yeah, pretty much. So if we jump forward a little bit, the Western Alliance kind of grows into a big world government and becomes what's known as the Terran Alliance. And in 2107, FTL travel is completed by a set of gentlemen known as Thomas Kearney and Takeyoshi Fushida, creating what's known as the Kearney-Fushida Drive, which is in all jump ships in BattleTech.
FTL travel, sorry.
Faster than light, so it allows us to go faster than the speed of light.
Like warp in Star Trek and stuff.
Warp in Star Trek or warp in other fiction. It's the contrived way of allowing us to go across the universe in days, not generations.
So we were doing that. Were we doing that previously? At that point, traveling between planets before that was invented.
Yeah, so before the Kinney-Fushida drive is invented, we've kind of colonized the solar system. We've got a lunar settlement and a Mars settlement, and we've kind of, we're on the sort of asteroid areas. So similar to a lot of fiction set in this star system, we've kind of taken it all over, and then we get something which allows us to go real fast. So that is the Kinney-Fushida drive, and it's kind of stayed unchanged for, well, over 1,000 years at this point.
Yep.
It works. It works really well. And it's kind of the basis of all everyone moving between the stars. So this all kind of goes relatively okay until the Terran Alliance kind of has a little bit of a problem, and there's a military coup under the Navy, and it becomes what's known as the Terran Hegemony.
Yep.
So this is the start of the Camerons, who are quite important to the history of Battletech, but unfortunately don't exist anymore as of the current era. During this period, around 2350, around that point, as Cameron's taking the Terran hegemony out into space, you start getting these foundations of what's known as the Great Houses. So these are the sort of big players who will sort of rise to prominence following a couple of issues later on down the line.
Sure.
And Dom, as you were saying, war is very bad. However, we are entering what's known as the Age of War. So, mid-24th century, we're in the galaxy, we're colonizing everywhere, these great houses are coming up, we've, everything's moving into a more militaristic and authoritarian direction under the Terran hegemony, and we start getting issues between two great houses known as the Compelling Confederation and the Free Worlds League. We'll talk about these at a later date, but really all you need to know now is that they are two big players in this galaxy. There's massive land grabs, and there's kind of a... there's a little bit of an issue on a planet called Tintervel, where they almost wipe out the population entirely. And this creates something known as the Ares Conventions. And this is basically something like the Geneva Conventions, right? So these govern the use of nuclear, biological, radiological weapons in this galaxy. It is kind of a running joke that everyone breaks them, but for a lesser or greater degree, they are kind of kept to, because once you sort of break them, the gloves are off. And
so just like the Real Geneva Convention, then we're breaking them all the time.
Well, that's a...
This is a political podcast, though.
not
officially breaking them.
But as part of the restriction set on the Ares Conventions, if you can't nuke people from orbit, how are you going to take them over? Well, do I have the thing for you? Battle mechs.
Oh, we like those. He said the thing, guys.
I said the thing that makes the battle mechs. So, they're developed in 2439. The first one to come off the line is a Mackie. That will mean nothing to you at the moment, Dom, but it's 100 tons of battle mech. It's pretty nasty, and it's, you know, and for some people that have never seen it before, when they drop onto the battlefield, people really don't like them.
You made a mess of quite a few tanks, I gather.
Absolutely, yeah. The Draconis Combine really did not have a great time. But what it does is, once the Terran Hegemony starts creating their own battle mechs, it kind of creates an arms race, where all of the great houses, sort of the five great houses at this point, are just trying to make their own. And some of them have better designs than others. I know I'm a fan of the Ymir from the Lyrans. Lewis, I gather you're a Gladiator fan?
I do like the Gladiator. He's a very handsome-looking mech, and he's kitted out perfect for me.
Although I will say, actually, probably one of the most long-lasting of this era is the Commando.
He is,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the first mechs ever made, and he's still pretty good, I'll be honest.
It's around quite a lot.
So after the Age of War happens, everyone kind of beats each other into a pulp, and this allows the Terran Hegemony to create what's known as the Star League. And the Star League is basically the United Nations in space. except a little bit more feudalistic. So, after this, during this period of the Age of War, a lot of the edges of the galaxy start breaking away from these great houses, and they become known as sort of this conglomerated group of smaller micronations known as the periphery states. And you then get what's known as the Reunification War, which is the Terran hegemony under the banner of the Star League decides that actually these people self-rule. They need to be ruled by Earth. So they go romping off into the depths of space for quite a long time. Basically just oppressing people.
None of this is like in the games that we played, is it?
No, this is
hundreds of years.
But I would say it's different opinion if they were oppressed or if they were enlightened / liberated by the Terran hegemony and the Star League.
Well, there you go.
This is a political podcast.
Oh gosh, it's becoming that way.
Well, something that happens next, which is I think is a very good thing. Lewis obviously will think it's a bad thing. Is a man named Stefan Amaris.
Boo hiss boo.
Manages to sort of wheedle his way as an advisor to the Star Lords of the Star League. Unfortunately, Richard Cameron, the sitting Lord of the Star League, dies in a tragic accident.
It was an assassination.
it's contested whether the piece of machinery he was looking at exploded due to negligence or actual assassination. But either way, it thrusts a child onto the seat of the Star League. And Stefan Amaris kind of takes over as the, like most things, uncle kind of advisor.
The scheming eunuch, that kind of thing.
but he sort of takes complete control of the situation, and in the end, actually shoots a child in the head and accuses the government.
Yeah, and
the political podcast.
Pretty standard, to be fair.
This is the guy we're supposed to be rooting for? Question mark.
Not necessarily rooting for, but you know, he does some bad things to a bad bunch of people. This leads to something known as the Amaris Civil War, which is probably one of the most important events before the games. The Star League Defense Force, led by a man named Alexander Kerensky, he has to basically fight back to Terra and take over the Terran hegemony, which has been renamed into the Amaris Empire. Bunch of rebranding. I'm sure someone made a killing on that.
Literally. Is he like a sort of Cromwell-esque figure?
Yeah. Kerensky's a kind of Cromwell-esque figure. He's trying to take everything back over from this, you know, pretty... You know, I joke, but Stefan Amaris is very clearly an evil person.
Right, okay.
He sanctions a bunch of terrible things to happen in the background. But the long and short of it is, after about 20 years, Alexander Kerensky takes Terra back over. Stefan Amaris is tried for his crimes and shot. And everyone's kind of left pretty bloodied. You know, everyone in the Inner Sphere is not having a great time. Kerensky has become very disillusioned by this point. And he realizes that the defense force of the Star League is only going to be used by these lords and these great houses to fight each other, and that actually
they would never do that, Tom. I think that was they would never do such a thing.
Lewis, when he tried to re-establish the Star League, the lords stripped him of his title of Protector of the Realm because they wanted to be First Lord themselves.
Which I think is a perfectly understandable thing. I'm sure they should have just given it to the Draconis Combine as suggested by the Draconis Combine.
Yeah, and I'm 100% sure that there will not be any more wars to try and succeed and become the new Star League. Nah.
Well,
can't imagine it.
Before we can have more wars, we have to have less war.
Yep.
Kerensky, seeing that he's only going to be used as a pawn in other people's games, decides, actually, I'm better off not being here. And he does something called the Exodus. So Operation Exodus is run by the Star League Defense Force, where 80% of all military personnel in the Star League leave the galaxy. And I'm sure we'll never see them again.
No, I don't know when they would ever come back.
Nope, they're never coming back.
No. They just went off. Yep, just went off and had their own Star League with Blackjack and Hookers.
Yeah, I'm Base sure. Hookers.
Yep,
I'm sure that they're never going to
mech Hookers.
But almost immediately after the military kind of left, everyone decides that they should be in charge.
What do they do? Just have like a election, pull straws?
No, they nuclear attack each other.
No!
It's not great. So,
who could have seen that coming?
Almost immediately we kick off into what's known as the First Succession War. This will sort of give you an impression that there might be more than one.
Yeah.
This is a 35-year-long war where everyone is fighting each other. The most notable event of which is known as the Kentaris Massacre, in which the Draconis Combine, Lewis's favourite faction, massacres nearly all of the citizens on a planet known as Kentaris 4.
I'm sure that was misremembered, and there might be some biases in that.
Well, okay. Sure, bud. This kind of peters out after 35 years, as everyone kind of has decided to nuke each other back into the Stone Age. During this point, a lot of technology starts to get lost.
I think when you drop that amount of nukes on planets, then people stop forgetting how to put things back together again.
Yeah,
so
well,
I guess you could call it lost tech.
We could call it lost tech. Jump ships, drop ships, and battle mech factories are incredibly difficult to make and refine. And when you start blowing them up, you start losing a lot of access to this. So this is why, as Nathan alluded to just then, you start seeing what's known as lost tech. So this is technology that used to be quite popular and quite easily available. And as of the later periods, before sort of there's the rediscovery of it all, you kind of get pushed back in time, where a lot of this stuff that's quite advanced gets lost. Funnily enough. Talking of losing things, unfortunately, 10 years after the First Succession War, we kick it off with the Second Succession War. And
like a World War II, World War I scenario where they should have seen it coming. The fact it was called the First Succession War should have clued people into the fact that...
Yeah, they should have seen this coming. And unfortunately, the Second Succession War was less deadly than the First Succession War, still destroys a bunch of Star League technology, and really just doesn't do a great job to help the people of the Inner Sphere. It's getting pretty bad. And this happens 34 years, they break it off for a little bit. 2 years later, they have a Third Succession War.
What?
They need to really kind of
not another.
Is this like a tiebreaker? Is this like a tiebreaker?
Yeah, I think this was third. Well, I mean, I think this is tiebreaker when you've kind of both people have been stabbed, and they're kind of flailing a little bit, because the Third Succession War lasts for 150 years. It's over a century of conflict. However, because they've all kind of blown each other up, and all the high-tech gear has been just destroyed, they are effectively hitting each other with rocks and sticks.
Right. Not literally, but effectively.
Effectively. With all of the automated facilities and all of these sort of high-tech things,
mechs are still around then.
Yes and no. So by this point, there's been a massive reduction in the amount of battle mechs that are still alive and kicking. So you start to see movement down from like company levels, where you might have like 36 mechs deploying against 36 mechs. In some states, you're getting 4 mechs versus 4 mechs. And that's all that a regiment can field at some points.
Right.
There's this massive reduction in army size, just because they've been blowing each other up and they simply cannot replace the mechs as fast as they're blowing them up.
It's weird.
And then eventually it gets to a point where no mechs are being made.
Well, very few. Yeah. Very few.
Well, they become, you get mech speed. You'd be it's at that point now where the mech is more important than the pilot, and so they'll try and salvage mechs from the battlefield quite often, and they'll try and get rid of the pilots while keeping the mechs pristine.
Yeah, so this is kind of, it sort of changes it from people's skill to actually the vehicles that they're in are now more important. And you can see this actually through the type of conflict that happens. The First and Second Succession War are more like out-and-out wars. This is sort of massive armies smashing into each other, just blowing each other, just ripping chunks out of each other's militaries. The Third Succession War is sort of populated by smaller raids and kind of more limited actions where you might, in 50 years, take two planets because you just can't afford to lose the same level of equipment as you could in the past.
Yeah, to an extent as well, where they stop attacking each other's dropships and jump ships because they can't replace them. And so they're unwritten / written rules saying, do not damage these because we can't fix them. We'd rather just let the enemy have them and we might be able to catch them back after them at some point.
Yeah, so you start seeing a lot more of like boarding operations being a big thing. You know, these jump ships are so valuable that they're willing to put sort of commandos who are, you know, space trained, whack them into a ship that's really awful and lose, you know, X amount of lives to take it rather than blow the ship up, because then nobody has it.
Super.
Right, so I'm picturing here some sort of like pitched battle medieval scenario where everyone's sort of dropping and there's like rules of war and stuff. It's not kind of like a ruleless conflict, is it? It seems like there's some designated laws and things like that. So those conventions that were created are still applying at this stage.
Yeah, I'd say more so now than in the first couple of Succession Wars. The first two Succession Wars, the gloves were off. Nuclear arsenals were used, and the full might of the successor states' militaries were deployed. By the Third Succession War, they've just run out. And you're starting to see, much like within certain periods of the Middle Ages in actual history, you are starting to see smaller bands of people being used in a more strategic way. Just because they can't afford to upkeep larger armies, or there just simply isn't the larger army available.
Yeah, your mechwarriors end up becoming your knights of the future. They become celebrities and quite important. But as you said, it's more them and their mechs become very dangerous, and they can take and hold planets with just a couple of mechs because that's all anyone has anymore.
What is like the sort of resources? What's the scenario in terms of resources here? Is there like any like, is it sort of scrapping over natural materials? Is it purely just to dominate? Like, why are they all fighting? I don't think I understand why they're all fighting.
So I think, well, a lot of the time they might not really know why they're fighting. You know, all of these nation states budge up against each other, and so there's natural friction from hundreds of years of kind of cross claims. You know, two of the same successor states may claim the same planet. A local noble who sort of lives nearby may feel that they're dispossessed because the planet that their family used to own is now in another successor state that's hostile to theirs, and so they petition their government to take it back. A lot of the time, you know, Star League caches were left across the galaxy, and so the moment someone hears that there might be some old lost tech knocking around,
everyone wants
a piece of that action.
But as Dom said, they do fight over just resources in general, just want to have certain planets. Certain planets have got resources that you need.
Mm-hmm. And as well as that, they have manufacturing facilities.
Not many left
and
of those.
A bunch of technology.
Super. Yeah, so actually manufacturing facilities are probably some of the most valuable.
Like, there'll be certain mechs which will only really be able to use one kind of weapon that was made in, like, a line from one company. That company's just on a planet. So to be able to do it, they'll either have to pay a lot of money to their rival successor state or the company, or they can just go and take it.
Super.
Okay, so what's life like? Like your average Joe, So I don't imagine myself to be a cool mech pilot. I imagine I'll be like the slop farmer or whatever they eat in BattleTech world. What's like your life like for an average Joe at this stage?
So Dom, I think that's a really varied question. I mean, I think asking that's very similar to asking like what's the life of an average person on Earth. It really depends where you live.
There's a lot of planets within the, they call the inner sphere. There's a lot of planets in universe, and it makes a massive difference to where you are. But I can see what Dom's saying is, what kind of level of technology do people have? But as Tom's alluding to, is it varies massively. But I think especially at this point, some of the technology that people have is probably a bit more advanced than what we have. The closer you are, probably towards the towards Earth, or maybe the capitals of the great houses, you might find they're better off and they've got better availability of technology. But you might find that some planets are very similar to kind of technology levels that we have, or maybe even a little bit further back.
Right, okay. But we're not talking sort of like barbarian worlds, are we? We're still
No,
kind of in the.
techno barbarians, I'd say. Like
Okay.
in one of the books, they go to this one desert planet, which is very much like how do you describe it? Like medieval, like Middle East, in like the politics. So you got the different sheriffs, and they're fighting against each other, but they've only got like five mechs each.
Okay,
So then
okay.
you'll have people like going by like horse-drawn cart to places. And you'll have like blood sports happening in like royal palaces, stuff like that. While
Right,
in
so it's
other
sort of an
places,
open book then.
yeah, while in other places, like, is it, which one's the like gladiator planet?
So that'd be Solaris 7.
Solaris, that's it. Yeah, that's a lot more like cyberpunk-esque.
Got you, got
It's
you.
a real mixed bag. If you think it, if you can think it, it probably is somewhere on the in the inner sphere. And you know, that's just the great houses. You've also got these sort of micro nations in the periphery where things are really kind of different. You know, a lot of them are very low access to kind of modern technology, so you are seeing sort of more, as Nathan was alluding to there, you are seeing these more kind of historical methods of transport or kind of historical ways of rulership rather than what you might expect from the future.
Like a 1963 Morris Minor.
I don't know if the if they can make those, but I'm sure there is a planet that's got something very similar.
So what happened to all of the technology from our time? Sorry for asking so many questions, but what's going on with like posters and televisions and
They
other things
still
that's
exist.
telly? Okay, so you can still go out and like watch the football, for example. I assume there's still like sport and stuff in this world.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
definitely.
So, a lot of the culture is very much the same. I mean, much like the mobile phone made the rotary telephone pretty much defunct. It's kind of similar. So people definitely have sort of future equivalents of things that we'd have today. You know, the toaster might have an LCD screen, but it's still a toaster. And there is, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there is quite a famous TV drama that the Archons quite like.
There's a one where it's a new rerun of Sherlock Holmes, but based in the in like the BattleTech time.
Oh yes,
Yeah.
I think yes, no, that is correct. I think the reason for that is that Sherlock Holmes had come out of copyright, and so they just decided that in BattleTech in 3025, there was new Sherlock Holmes.
Yep, and
So you're
it's
telling me
like
that in the future we're still not past the sort of constant sequels of modern movie making?
absolutely
Fantastic.
not.
No.
No. If anything, it's worse.
I think so,
The
man.
thing that you need to remember is that this, for the most part, was made in the 80s or 90s, so it will be a lot of past future tech. So they obviously wouldn't know about a smartphone, but there'll be like holograms of the future. So obviously, there's a hologram phone that you can have.
Okay. So it's sort of retro futurism, isn't
retro
it?
Retro futurism.
They call it. They call
nowadays
it,
an ill plan.
They call it.
It's this, starting to.
Is it like cassette kind of?
Cassette yeah,
kind
like
of.
They have cassette drives to transport information about the place.
It's got that very it's got that very Aliens One kind of vibe with some of the technology. You've still got probably some of the monitors and stuff being LCD and some of the data transfer devices are that we would equate to being a USB key are probably the size of a suitcase, and I think they use fax machines equivalents to kind of send messages between planets. So it's stuff that we would take for granted now, that you could send a lot of data. Obviously, at the point in the 80s that you couldn't do that, so they just kind of have that same amount of data being sent, but it might just be sent between planets.
Like this one massive piece of technology called the Helm Memory Core, which, like, we'll get onto that in a later date, but in the book, they're like, oh my god, it's got 370 megabytes of data on it. So how does it fit in this? I don't understand it.
No, obviously,
this being a briefcase.
Yeah,
it's literally like the memory core is the size of a briefcase, and it's just got some. It's just got schematics on it of like things to build. So it's you do have to look at it from a lens of it was created in the 80s, and I think a lot of the new authors have done a really good job of keeping that sort of cassette futurism vibe going. I'd say probably the best way to look at it is, like an Alien, or sort of, if you've ever played Alien Isolation, very similar vibes, that kind of thing. A lot of clacking keys.
Okay, so the biggest prediction here, well, the biggest point here is, did it predict any sort of technology that we have today? So obviously, when people think of predictive technology, they go to Star Trek and look at things like communicators and say, oh, wow, they predicted, like, mobile phones. Is there anything in Battletech?
Unfortunately, they have not predicted battle mechs, so I'm still holding out hope. But it seems as though
I think Tom's also holding out hope for genetically engineered catgirls as well. I think from our conversations, I think that is the truth.
Towards Canopians is my own. Thank you very much. let's not air that on the internet.
Yeah, and I suppose. It's kind of, it is that kind of cassette, kind of retro. They've started to update a little bit of it, I think, at the moment. Some of
when
the
you
artwork.
Get into the Ill Clan era, it starts to be more like modern day, like they've changed technology to be like, oh, they brought out this, and they brought out like a phone, and they've brought out, well, actually, no, they haven't brought out their internet, have they? something happens. But, yeah.
Yeah, so that way.
One thing it's predicted, lasers.
Yeah, lasers. Laser guns. Lasers, and you've got fusion reactors as well. People, obviously, that's something that's popping off at the moment. Maybe not going to be powering our cars or mechs anytime soon, but it's happening.
We can hope.
We can only hope. But yeah, so where does that bring us up to, Tom? Where does that kind of leave us in the timeline?
Well, the Third Succession War ends in 3022. Everyone's kind of had a little bit of enough of this whole Succession War business. They've decided to call it after three. So where we're going to leave it is, you know, the main sort of starting point that I think everyone that I've talked to starts off in Battletech is 3025.
So it's what they call for gameplay wise, it's intro tech, and it's obviously where a lot of the novels kind of start off or around about those areas. So it's not a bad it's not a bad area to kind of leave for today and kind of start digging in from. Because I think
absolutely,
I think a lot of stuff comes from this point, and a lot of the story branches off from here.
Yeah, so I think this is a really good point because, you know, at this point, the battle lines are drawn, people know where they stand, and 3025 is great because, as we'll talk about, I think, potentially next week, you see the massive rise of small mercenary units.
Yes.
And we'll touch on them when we start talking about the players in the sort of intro tech world, as I think that's a great jumping off point for someone like Dom. And it creates the really good building blocks for us to then sort of add to when we start moving forward and talking about these other factions that kind of spring up over the timeline.
Yeah, super. So that brings us to 3025, and as Tom said, obviously, yeah, next time, next kind of lore session, we can have a bit more of a look at what's going on at this point. But up to this point, have you got any questions at the moment, Dom, that you want to ask, or you kind of have we kind of thrown enough information at you now that you need to kind of sit down and let it settle in?
I mean, no questions, just a big obviously a big thank you to Tom for putting all that together. It's really appreciated. I think you did a really good job of sort of breaking that down in a palatable way. I know that whenever people try and talk to me about Battletech normally, it's sort of one ear in, one ear out the other, so it's much appreciated.
By people, do you mean me?
I do mean you, yes.
I think it helps having that that kind of base knowledge, I think, that from what Tom's gone through there to kind of to draw from there. But yeah, so that's
absolutely,
yeah, cool. But yeah, as Dom said, thank you very much for putting that together anyway, Tom. And I think we're going to pop back off, have a little bit of a break, and then come back for the end of the podcast. See you guys. All right, we're back from break. Anyway, that was a great lore session there from Tom. Some stuff I didn't realize that we branched off in the 90s. That's something I learned.
I didn't know there was microwaves still.
It's not something I really thought about, but I assumed they were still there or they'd be an analog. But I suppose that we Tom has told us there is now microwaves in BattleTech. Definitely, 100% sure. Are you sure that's true?
That is canon.
Canon there. But yeah, so thank you for joining us for this first podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And obviously, we'll be hopefully doing a new one soon. Next episode, we'll be looking at diving into the Great Houses of the Inner Sphere, probably around 3025. Just to tell you what's going on at that point. But yeah, and I think for me, that's everything. Anything you guys want to say or shout out before we go?
Stefan,
nothing for me.
Nothing wrong.
Stefan, I
was good.
Oh dear. All right. Thanks for listening anyway, guys. Catch you next time.